The Science Show on RN, and of course another big concern everywhere, is the emergence of the coronavirus. Jamie Lloyd-Smith of UCLA has just published, and when I met him, I was typically rude. Very interesting. You shook my hand on the way in. Is that the sort of procedure you'd recommend people to do when we're so worried about the spreading of a disease?
Well, I think in the current context here in California, I don't have any qualms about shaking somebody's hand, especially just having washed it.
Well, I have just got off a plane from the Pacific and the Far East.
Fair point. Maybe I'll go wash it again then. So far, there is no imminent risk in the United States, and so there's certainly no need for panic. And the most well-founded advice is to keep doing what we should be doing anyway in flu season, which is washing our hands and not sneezing on each other.
And what about the border protection? Is that being done effectively, do you think?
Well, from what we understand about the thermoscanners that are used in airports, they're fairly effective at picking up fever if you've got it. But that's a crucial caveat. For any infectious disease, there's a period of time between when you get infected and when you begin to show the symptoms of infection, like fever. And then there's some people who may not ever show a fever that will be picked up by those scanners. And so for both those reasons, we can't rely too heavily on something like fever screening to pick up every infected case. We need to be ready for the fact that some are going to slip through.
What's the main thrust of the paper that you've been working on in this regard?
It's effectively that while traveler screening may serve to catch some infected travelers, we certainly cannot rely on it to catch all infected travelers. And in fact, when you put in the numbers that represent our best understanding of this coronavirus right now, it looks like you should expect to catch fewer than half of infected travelers who pass through a screening point.
And that's leaving a very large number to pass on what infection they don't know they have.
Well, it may well allow a good number of travelers to come through the screening posts and go on to whatever they're allowed to go on to. And so governments do need to be aware either to remain in contact with them, keep surveillance on them, or in the extreme measure to actually quarantine people until they're more confident that they're clear of infection.
Having had the experience of SARS in China, of course, characterized by trying to keep things reasonably quiet as long as possible, various critics such as Laurie Garrett, who's well known on our networks, has said that the Chinese reaction so far has been pretty good and we should benefit from such openness. So do you think that so far it has been so good?
It has certainly been better than SARS. I should say that SARS was the outbreak that got me into this business in the first place. I don't think the Chinese response is entirely beyond reproach. There were a period of several weeks when information was being suppressed rather than shared, and those weeks turn out to be pretty crucial right now.
And going back to Laurie Garrett with her famous book, The Coming Plague, won her a Pulitzer Prize, she predicted that because of our populations and the way we're crowded together, getting worse and worse, we can expect this sort of thing to break out on more and more of a regular basis. Do you agree?
Yes, I think it is to be expected and increasingly borne out by reality that we know that there is a vast diversity of viruses out there. We increasingly know that many of them have varying levels of ability to infect humans and even spread among humans.
Doing a leap from corona to flu, what was the paper you published quite recently about the effect of having had flu of a certain type beforehand, in its turn affecting the way you respond to the latest flu epidemic as it comes this year, next year, the year after?
It turns out that when you're born, never been exposed to any influenza virus, your immune system's a blank slate, then you get your first flu infection. It turns out that that leaves an imprint on your immune system, which is sustained over the rest of your life. And this has been known to some degree, and our understanding of it has been growing over the decades. In a paper a few years ago, we showed surprisingly that as a consequence of this original imprinting to a seasonal flu strain, you actually turn out to be protected against one or another family of avian flu, strains that have never circulated among humans before, if they're in the same branch of the flu family tree as the first flu virus you ever met. It turns out you have some protection against these avian flus. And this reads out in terms of who dies or is most severely impacted by H5N1 avian flu versus H7N9 avian flu. Coming to your question, what we were doing in this study was investigating whether that same type of immunity has bearing on your susceptibility to severe seasonal flu. And what we found is that, yes, there is evidence that your first childhood infection does have a lifelong influence on your risk, However, the evidence is a little less clear as to what exactly it is in the flu family tree and on the flu virus which mediates this risk.
Makes one wonder what to do about it, whether one should expose children to, as we say, dirt, so that that gives you some sort of immunity, or give them all every kind of flu jab available so that they're not necessarily open to any kind of infection that you know about. However, does that mean that they're going to get ones you don't know about?
That's a very good question. I am certainly not going to suggest that people should hold off vaccinating their children based on this research. Vaccines are one of the best and most durably tested public health remedies that we have. And if anything, we are increasingly faced with severe public health issues caused by people's hesitancy around vaccinating, and we should do everything we can to reverse that and get vaccination coverage back up. On the topic of influenza, it is simply not known at this point how infant influenza vaccination maps onto this topic that I'm talking about with imprinted immune responses. We haven't been giving influenza vaccines to children for long enough, and certainly not in the countries that have been affected by avian flu, in order for there to be a sort of real-world evidence base to test these ideas. But with all that said, over the course of doing this work, I've had two young children. Both are vaccinated.
Of course they are. On my way out, will you shake my hand?
I certainly will. It'll be a pleasure.
Jamie Lloyd-Smith is Professor of Ecology at UCLA. The Science Show on RN. More from America next week.